Injured in a car accident? We cap attorney's fees at 30% of the first million. Any recovery above that is all yours. No recovery, no fees or costs. If another lawyer wants more, Lawyer Up 904. For accidents, injuries, and more, Lawyer Up 904. Jacksonville.
The Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
You know, I didn't really even realize it until this exact second, but the opening anthem has a little bit of a holiday feel. Right? Kind of gliding right into the holidays. What a week it is going to be. Hopefully for you, time spent with family and friends. Let's hope it includes the in-laws, not the outlaws. I just can't imagine that, being a part of a Thanksgiving Day dinner and there are issues within the fam. I hope that's not the case. I hope it's one that is filled with a lot of football, great friends, family, obviously a tremendous amount of food. And it's actually a really good Thanksgiving Day as far as the NFL. Three pretty entertaining games. Still can't believe what happened in Minnesota last night. Just getting blown away by Dallas. And what a freaky week it was in the National Football League. So obviously, Jacksonville enjoyed the bye. You as a fan needed a week off to get recharged. Now you look at Jacksonville and where they're at. You know, 10 games in, according to Pro Football Outsiders, Jacksonville had the third easiest schedule in the National Football League. That changes dramatically here over the final seven games. I mean, if you look at divisional leaders and who they have as far as opponents, we know that the NFL playoff structure at this particular time, Baltimore coming in, even though they struggled yesterday with Carolina, they're among the leaders of the eight divisions. They have a 7-3 mark, one game better than Cincinnati right now in the AFC North. Of course, two more games this year, a home and away with Tennessee. After their victory at Lambeau on Thursday night, all of a sudden Tennessee has a four-game lead over the Jaguars, and they're up three games in the win column over the Indianapolis Colts, who nearly pulled off another huge upset a day ago. It was just a weird Sunday in the NFL. I mean, Kansas City, that last second come from behind drive at home was impressive. But you look at some of these wins and some of these teams who just could not play yesterday. Buffalo, and I understand they moved to Detroit and they hadn't moved that game because of the weather. But Cleveland hung around way too long in that game, including putting up 13 points in the fourth quarter. Buffalo able to hang on. Just talked about the Colts and Jeff Saturday trying to go 2-0. If he had won that game yesterday, can you imagine how the dumbing down of the head coaching position honestly would have been in NFL circles? And thankfully, for that reason and that reason alone, Philadelphia got a victory on the road, but a one-point victory. And they had to outscore Indianapolis 14-3 in the fourth quarter. A couple of late touchdowns. Of course, Jalen Hurts took one in with his feet. But again, just kind of a bizarre story. You know, the hangover by the Rams. They're now 3-7. What's next? Jalen crying? Saying he doesn't want to lose anymore? Is Jalen going to come up with a problem with his back? Is that going to be the case there with Ramsey in Los Angeles? You look at, you know, Cincinnati. I think some people threw them out of being able to, you know, to bounce back or repeat and do what they did a year ago, considering what happened when they surprised all of us in the NFL by making it to the AFC Championship game. It looked like you could throw dirt on the Bengals a few weeks ago. All of a sudden, they're one of many teams right now in the National Football League that you can make a case, honestly, does have an opportunity to make a run at the playoffs. As you know, this is year two of the brand new playoff structure. Okay, 14 teams, 7 in each conference. Only one club's going to get a bye. It's not like the old days where two teams got byes. The 6 other are going to face one another, and the team with the bye is, you know, makes it through wild card weekend and gets to go to the divisional round. Right now, that would be Kansas City in the AFC. And Kansas City's an interesting team. Say what you want about Jacksonville, but they played with them for 60 minutes. And in my opinion, the biggest concern on that particular day was Jacksonville couldn't take advantage of takeaways. And also, unfortunately for the Jaguars, against a very poor rushing offense, they just allowed too much against the run in that game against Kansas City. NFC, it's Philadelphia. Again, 9-1. Now, where are you, Buffalo? The National Football League wanted to hand the Super Bowl to Buffalo back in mid-September. You know, all of a sudden, they're struggling. And if you look at divisional rankings, okay, they're 0-2. That's the second measuring stick. Miami's ahead of them. Both have records at 7-3. But Miami's 2-1 in the division. Baltimore 0-2. So if the playoffs were to begin this weekend, Kansas City gets the bye. Miami wins the East. How's this for a number? The AFC East and the NFC East combined, every single team above 500. The AFC South and the NFC South, all 8 teams, only one club is 500 or better, and that is Tennessee. Every team in the AFC South, besides Tennessee, under 500. Every team in the NFC South, either at 500 or below it. Obviously, when you look at Tampa Bay, who is 5-5, and now Atlanta falls behind after yesterday, they're 5-6. So that's the very latest there. Just the bizarre year, because when we were previewing the schedules, and everyone does it, you know, I had Jacksonville this year. I was thinking, you know what? They could go 0-4 against the AFC West. When I was ranking schedules, I had the trip to L.A., the second most difficult game on the schedule, only behind the trip to Kansas City. And for the record, I had them going to Tennessee as 3 and then going to Philadelphia at 4. Those are my top 4. Well, they go 2-2 against the AFC West, including coming down, 17-0 a couple of weeks ago against the Raiders. It's the NFC East, which is just mind-boggling. This division has gotten rocked the last half decade. It's been a terrible division, really going back to, you know, when Doug Peterson and Philadelphia won the Super Bowl. And all of a sudden, the NFC East 3-0 against Jacksonville, and you still have one game remaining against the Dallas Cowboys. And after watching what Dallas did last night, my God, that's going to be a tough putt. So they can end up going 2-2 in the AFC West and 0-4. In the NFC East. I never would have projected that going back during the offseason. I have a tough time believing that any of you out there would have gone down that same road as well. So back to the AFC. Kansas City 8-2, Miami 7-3, Tennessee reps the South at 7-3. Baltimore coming in here now at 7-3. I'm not going to say they were looking ahead, right? They were looking through Carolina to get here to Jacksonville, but if you look at Baltimore's schedule, it's pretty comforting if you're a Ravens fan. Their next 4 opponents are against teams with records who are 3-7, okay? That includes Jacksonville, that includes Denver, that includes Pittsburgh. Cleveland, yeah, they're 3-7 as well. So, you know, 4 straight opponents against 3-7 teams. And then you look at it the rest of the way. They get Atlanta, who's under 500 at 5-6. You get Pittsburgh, that just looks really bad right now, yet another team at 3-7. Then they wrap it up at home, on the road against Cincinnati. And I raise that about Baltimore because all of a sudden they're like, why can't we score? So I looked up the numbers getting ready for the matchup this weekend. Despite what you have seen as of late, Baltimore's still a very productive offensive team, nearly 25 a game. That's 9th in the NFL if you look at their scoring offense for the Ravens. 24.8, so, you know, dismiss the 13 of yesterday. Also defensively, and they're one of the only teams in the NFL that's top 10 in both scoring offense and scoring defense. Defensively, they're allowing 19.9 a game. against this Jacksonville offense. So, you know, we'll spend obviously much more time on the Ravens tomorrow night as well as Wednesday night before, obviously, the Thanksgiving holiday. All right, three wild card teams right now. Buffalo is your top wild card at 7-3. New England at 6-4. I'm going to talk about the Patriots and the Jets on the other side because I want to get to quarterbacks. All right, and for those of you who have been pounding Trevor Lawrence this year, if you watched that masterpiece yesterday between the Patriots and the Jets, you saw two organizations that have no faith in their quarterback. None. Zip. And frankly, the numbers of Mac Jones doesn't support that argument. He averaged 9.1 yards a pass yesterday. But, you know, you got a 3rd and 4 and 4th and 3 and you run it from midfield. Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia and Joe Judge and that incredible offensive brain trust. That's what you do when you got a quarterback who's completing, you know, more than 80% of his passes. They just took the ball right out of his hand. So anyway, I'm going to get to this coming up in a little bit because it's going to segue into a Trevor Lawrence conversation. But New England is the second wild card team. Then Cincinnati is a wild card team at 6-4. You got the Jets hanging right there. You know, they're one team out at 6-4. Then you got the Chargers and the Colts still mathematically in it. Heck, Jacksonville mathematically is in it. I want to say they have like an 8% chance to make it to the playoffs with 7 games going. They got to get on a serious roll. I mean, honestly, to make it, 5 wins could probably do it, right? If you were to go 5-2, that would put you at 8-9. Maybe 6, obviously far more comfortable, but I don't care who you are or what the set of circumstances are. Can you really make a case that Jacksonville's going to go 6-1 the rest of the way through? And granted, I look at things differently. I'll admit that. All right. But all of a sudden for me, when you look at the Jaguars and you look at their schedule remaining, the most important game is not Baltimore. Okay, it's not at Tennessee winning at the Houses of Horror, you know, the House of Horrors. How about what Detroit did yesterday? All of a sudden the Detroit offense is dare I say unstoppable. Dallas against the Jets. The most important game on this schedule right now for the Jaguars is Houston. I mean, if you can at least do one good thing here during the remainder of this year, get rid of the 0 of their last 9 against Houston. It felt like early on this year, every week was a streak, right? Jags can't win against an NFC opponent, especially the Jags can't win against an NFC opponent on the road. Jags can't win out west. Well, they got that done by knocking off, you know, LAC early during the season. Houston's won 8 in a row. I'll check that. Now Houston's won 9 in a row. This Houston team is awful, and you got to go there. And you have to win that game. It's on New Year's Day. I don't know, travel. I mean, you're talking about young kids, families, this and that. They're away. I know it's their gig. I know it's their profession. But traveling during the holidays, to me, always favors the home team. Jacksonville actually catches a break, and it's twofold. That they go to New York and play on a Thursday night, so they'll be back here, you know, early Friday morning, and they'll be able to enjoy Christmas and the holidays with their family. They'll also be able to take advantage of another 72 hours worth of rest and preparation. When you play Thursday night in New Jersey, then you turn around, you go back on the road at Houston. But you know as well as I do that if you follow trends, and you have forever in the NFL, the second road game consecutively, your chances of winning, even when you're a great team, even when you're a perennial playoff team, drops off drastically from 1 to 2 straight road games. And these two are surrounded by the holidays. Again, they do have the extra 72 hours, which is a really good thing. Okay? And I think that's a major part of the intangibles. But to me, that's what it's all about. It sure would be nice to knock off Baltimore. Be nice to knock off Dallas. It'd be great to go into Houston and win, or excuse me, go into Tennessee and win. I'm not trying to get away from that. But for me, if I was saying, hey, you can win one game the rest of the year, which one are you going to pick for Jacksonville? Believe it or not, I'm going to pick winning at Houston. Maybe the easiest game on tap. So you'd be a fool to do that, right? Not in this case. Not for me. Let's get rid of that whole psyche. I don't need an off season around here. We're talking about Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars are 0-4 against Houston. And that overall as a team, this organization is 0 for their last 10 against Houston. Just my way of looking at it. NFC, Philly on top at 9-1. They get the bye. Minnesota just stung last night. What an unbelievable pass rush by the Dallas Cowboys. They're scary. Prescott's better than I believe I've ever given him credit for. Pollard, all of a sudden, is becoming a star. You look at them defensively, particularly Micah Parsons. I mean, just a special football player, a game-changing football player. 10 pressures last night, 2 sacks, forced fumble. The guy's a monster. Seattle, maybe the surprise of everything that is the NFL. 6-4, hanging on in the West. Tampa repping the South at 5-5. Three playoff teams as far as wild cards. Dallas, New York, and San Francisco has a big game tonight. They're a heavy favorite on the road in Arizona. The Commanders still with an opportunity. Atlanta and Detroit still with an opportunity, albeit for Detroit, it's a long shot. Also, Arizona, a long shot. They're going to need to win tonight at home in order to get to 5-6. All right, so we're busy. When I come back, we got a lot here on the Jags. I want to talk about young quarterback play right now in the league and where Trevor Lawrence is with some of these draft classes from 2020, 2021. If you saw their deal yesterday with Zach Wilson, it was a total embarrassment for him personally as a man. I also think he really hurt the organization. If you don't know what I'm talking about, good. We're going to get to that coming up on the other side. But for all of those who are on Trevor, and for one reason or another, Trevor is becoming the guy that you feel you have to comment negatively on. Listening to what Zach Wilson said yesterday, really happy that Lawrence is the quarterback in this city and not Wilson. I would be totally disgusted today if I was a Jets fan. Opening comments brought to you by Schmunez Vision. They are a family organization. They focus on personal high-quality medical and surgical eye care. Dr. Catherine Schmunez, fellowship trained in cornea cataract surgery. All refractive surgery. Yeah, more than 8 years ago, they found something in my eye that needed surgery immediately. And you know what? They went in. They got it done. There's been no setbacks. Every time I visit them, the health of my eyes are perfect. So whether it's contacts, whether it's glasses, whether it's readers, whether it's anything with your eyes, how about cataracts? And you may think that you have an issue there, you need surgery. You may not. You may just need some other sort of treatment. That's what's so key about getting an eye exam at Schmunez Vision. This is a family-based practice that really cares about you individually. And it's why I would go to no other. All right. They are tops right here in Jacksonville. Number is 299-2906 or visit SchmunezVision.com. Dylan Denmark in tonight. JJ in my hometown of Boston, Massachusetts. What's up, young man?
Not a whole lot.
Yeah, not a whole lot. Not a lot of
Gators,
good stuff.
Yeah, the Gators.
Yeah.
Yeah, about that.
That was pretty bad, huh?
Yeah, and it doesn't look too good this Friday night either.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that, no doubt, tonight and the rest of the week as well. Friday night is weird, but yeah, Florida really stunk up the joint. Shocked by that, including on top of it, if you look at Anthony Richardson, who threw for 400 yards, they still just couldn't do anything against the Commodores. All right, so we have that coming up. Again, I'm going to begin here with quarterback play and, of course, the very latest on Trevor Lawrence. Good to have you with us. Best way to get on is on the text line, 641-1010. That is brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we'll descend away. It is 26 minutes past 6 o'clock with you tonight till 8. Hacker Nation will join you then tomorrow night after Helmets and Heels Wednesday, 6 to 8. Then we're off for Thanksgiving. Thursday and Friday, I'll be back in town for the Jaguars game against the Ravens on Sunday. Going to head to Tampa. Spend Thanksgiving with my GF, my dad, my brother and his family. Also get a chance to visit my mother a couple of days in assisted living, which is disappointing, but, you know, that's what happens when we get older. All right, breaking news in the world of college football recruiting. We have a flip, okay? It's Brock Glenn. He is a four-star. He hails from Memphis, Tennessee, and he had given the verbal quite a while back. I think it was, what, a year ago? Or was it this past July?
July, yeah, this July.
He gave it to Ohio State. He is flipped to Mike Norvell and the Florida State Seminoles. 6'2", 195, a four-star, and even better, his name is Brock. I mean, I love this kid. Without knowing anything about him, I want my quarterback to be named Brock, okay? I mean, there's certain names that really, to me, equal a great QB. I'd like to say Brock. What do we have around here? We have Brock Berlin, right? He played for both the Gators and the Canes. Who else do we have as a Brock? Was Brock Sanders or was it Brock? It was Brock Sanders, right, who I think was that was kind of his alias for Chest Rockwell in the Dirk Diggler movie, Boogie Nights. They kind of, you know, went alias for a while, kind of their inner ego, if you will. And I want to say it was Brock Sanders there. What else do we have as far as a Brock, though? I mean, I like Brock. I think Bo would be cool. You don't want any bad names like Chubba. You know, maybe Florida State had Chubba Purdy. You could just tell that that was going to be a failure from day one. But here you go. I don't know anything about him, okay? And that's today's college football recruiting. It's not like the old days. You know, the internet is one out. The transfer portal's going nuts.
Brock Bowers, Georgia.
Brock Bowers.
Obviously.
Oh, yeah. There's an NFL man.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Georgia's going to put a couple of tight ends in the NFL. Of course, Bowers is ineligible for another season. So that rolled in a couple of minutes ago. Brock Glenn, 6'2", 195. Flips from Ohio State to Florida State. Huge week for Florida State. I'm going to get to that coming up here in just a couple of moments. As I said, though, I do want to begin with the quarterback play. It's time, in my opinion, to really look at the classes of 2020 and 2021. And there's been so much, I don't know, so much of a difference as far as the opinions that have been offered this year about Trevor Lawrence. And I think there's a lot of different groups out there. I think the best group, and if I'm rating the way that you are responding to what Trevor Lawrence has done in now a year and a half's worth of work, I think the brightest fans look at it this way. He's on the come. He's getting better. It's nowhere near perfect, but it could be a hell of a lot worse. See Zach Wilson. See Mac Jones. See any of these, you know, see some of these younger quarterbacks. Fields is obviously playing well. And if you go to the draft class the year prior to that, it really looks good, okay? Herbert looks good. Obviously, all of a sudden, Tua, even though it appeared it was going to take a little while for him to get things going, he looks special. Joe Burrow has already made it to a Super Bowl in just 2 years, and all of a sudden, Cincinnati is a team that is absolutely has the arrow pointing forward. Jalen Hurts, totally surprised by Jalen Hurts. Okay, particularly his percentage, his completion percentage, is much better than I thought it would be. But with Trevor, you know, you've got those who are going to bash him, and I understand that the bashing of him is intensified because you were force-fed such a fairy tale with this man. I mean, you were told that this is the greatest quarterback money can buy, and he has been put together piece by piece, and has everything that you want as a leader and a quarterback. And there have been some times where he is disappointed. Okay, so you have that part out there with that fan base. You have the other that is just convinced that it's not going to work, that he's a bust, and that he was overhyped and he was overplayed and he just doesn't have the it factor. I think that is absolutely, totally, completely absurd. Here are the facts. The guy's 23, man. He turned 23 a couple of weeks ago. And his leadership has been questioned in a lot of ways. He's not the raw, get in your face, scream down to others. That's not what he is about. However, there's accountability with Trevor Lawrence. You listen to what Zach Wilson said yesterday. I'm so happy that that is not the case here in this city. And, you know, the tough media here in Jacksonville would be on him, right? The fan base here in Jacksonville obviously would be on him. I can't wait to see. And I hate using the term I can't wait. It drives me nuts. And I just said it. But I am incredibly interested and how the New York, New Jersey media is going to handle this. His actions yesterday after a, 10-3 loss. You realize the Jets in the second half ran 27 offensive plays and they picked up 2 yards, okay? 2 yards on 27 plays. And it's a basic question by the media scribe. He's like, Zach, you guys just put up 3 points. Your defense held New England to 3 points. If you didn't see the game, it was a punt return. And there was a block in the back. I mean, they didn't call it. It was one of the stupidest penalties I have ever seen because the punt return man was going to score. And it was, like, totally irrelevant. You know, there's times when you'll see a holding. Let's say the ball is being run to the left and you have your right tackle or your right guard who will commit a holding, yet the defensive player isn't within 5 to 7 yards of the back, and he has absolutely zero chance of catching him. And you say to yourself, why in the hell would they just commit an offensive holding play like that? It was the same deal yesterday on this punt return. It's like the guy's by you. This man has no chance of tackling him, yet they didn't call it. I wonder if that game was in New Jersey yesterday and not in Foxborough. Or if it was not Bill Belichick on the sideline, if it was someone else, let's say it was, I don't know, back to the days of Pete Carroll when he was the head coach, or Chuck Fairbanks when he was the coach, or Raymond Berry when he was the head coach, or Ron Meyer before he took the guy on parole and told him to go out there and clear off a clean path so John Smith could make that game-winning field goal. Would they have gotten the same call? I tend to believe no way. I tend to believe it would have been a fly. But anyway, Zach Wilson, after the game, the media is like, hey, Zach, you only put up 3 points of defense. Held him to 3 points. Do you have anything to say to your defense? Do you feel responsible for letting down your defense? He's like, no. Looked right at the guy and said, no. So, you know, Mark Cannizzaro, who I know well from the New York Post, he covers the Jets. He also covers the PGA Tour. I've known Mark forever, and I see him every year. He comes here. For the players, they're going crazy now. Already, this early in his second season, there are people looking over their shoulder when it comes to Zach Wilson in New York. And he has created somewhat of a scenario where all of a sudden the locker room's, you know, divisive. And Robert Saleh, even today, went out and said, we're keeping everything on the table when it comes to who the starting quarterback is going to be. Really, just an awful look for Zach Wilson. And you know what? For what it's worth, it was a no-brainer, okay? Everyone would have drafted Trevor. All 32 teams would have drafted Trevor 2 years ago over Zach Wilson. But it seems like every year they reshuffle and they go back and they redraft the quarterbacks, you know, from 2020 and 2021 and 2022. And we've seen that change a little bit for all of the quarterbacks, including with Trevor Lawrence, where all of a sudden people are like, well, no, I draft Justin Fields now. And I remember last year, you know, the thought was, well, look at Mac Jones. Look at the season he's putting together. You know, if you were to redraft, it would be Mac Jones. The Zach Wilson stuff really hasn't appeared all that much. Mac Jones, oh, by the way, is a very, very interesting development. If you look at Mac Jones and what he did yesterday, and again, this is clearly obvious by watching the game, that they have no faith in this guy. That old expression, we're not asking you to win it, we're just asking you not to lose it, and you're a game manager. I mean, he was 23 of 27 yesterday with one drop. He averaged 9.1 yards was his average. His quarterback ranking was 104.6. He threw for 246 yards. His completion percentage was 85.2. Yet, if you watch the game, and you got a feeling for the flow of the game, there is zero confidence right now in Mac Jones as the quarterback in New England. Zero. And again, the best example I could give you was 3rd and 4 and then ended up being 4th and 3. And they ran the ball both times where you got a quarterback who's 23 of 27. It's totally mind-boggling. So anyway, the point I'm trying to make, that draft class, Zach Wilson, right now he's on the hook. Mac Jones, the arrow's not pointed forward for him right now in New England. And, you know, you look at Chicago, they're not winning, but Justin Fields is doing some good things. And then obviously around here, it's all about Trevor Lawrence, whether you're in, not in, or maybe I'd be surprised. But again, some of you at this particular point have already moved on and think that, you know, he's not going to be the answer. Totally disagree with you there. Is he a great leader? I'd like to see a little bit more enthusiasm, a little bit more of that on the field. But when you put him in front of the media and he delivers his message to you, Jaguar fans, through the media, the man has accountability. And it's real accountability. I mean, Blaine Gabbert had accountability. But when you're looking at Blaine Gabbert and he was talking to you, it kind of reminded me of a drunk in a bar, okay, as a former bartender, that, you know, you got this liquored up customer who's telling you he's going to do this, he's going to do that. Blaine Gabbert, obviously sober, but he would take everything on, and yeah, it's going to be this, it's going to be that. But then you really looked at his body language and his facial expressions, and you saw him in the locker room, and the fact that he didn't react well, at least in my opinion, with teammates, you knew it wasn't genuine. Even though it was being told, it didn't feel right. It feels right here with Trevor. Regardless of what the situation is, he deserves credit for that, okay? He needs to be better. There's no doubt he needs to be better. But when it comes to self-awareness and discipline and putting it on himself, he does that. And by the way, I understand the other side. I can understand if you're like, Blue, just shut up. The guy promised us, you know, in Houston, he's on the goal line. He throws a bad pass and it's picked. And he promises us that that's not going to happen. Then he goes out and does the same thing 3 weeks later. Okay, I can't defend that. I'm aware of that. But I still think much better than these other couple of quarterbacks who really both especially Zach Wilson. Very difficult day on Sunday. All right, we got much more to do. Let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, I got something with the Jags I'm going to throw out to you, give you an opportunity to respond. Again, the best way to do so is on the text line, 641-1010. Also going to get to some college football. What a Saturday. My goodness, the upsets in the world of college football. All of that's coming up. Again, best way to get a hold of us is the text line, 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
We are on YouTube tonight, Dylan.
We are.
How do the listeners pop on so they can check out what's happening here?
Go to YouTube.com, go to the search bar, 1010XL, and you'll see right there. Live on Into the Night with Rick Ballew.
You know, I'm pimping all my sponsors tonight. I got a Miller Lite vest.
I see that.
I got a Stream Song ball cap, golf cap, color coordinated. Right?
Representing.
I it would probably be accurate if I told you that I was about out the door and the GF said, that hat doesn't go with that
vest. Can you imagine what men's wardrobe would be like without women?
Bro, I have zero clue on how to get dressed. None. And I think I'm starting to get a little bit colorblind when it comes to dark blue and black.
Really?
Yeah, it's the only crossover that I have issues with. And I've noticed it, believe it or not, on golf courses too. You know, I'm not worthy of hitting from the black, but I do play the blue. And there's been times where, you know, let's say it's a normal round and I've had 17 Miller Lights and we're popping up to the eighth hole. Okay. I can't tell if it's blue or black.
Everything looks the same.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of just judge on the distance?
No, I trust the rangefinder.
Yeah.
Okay. or ask one of my buddies. That's how it works. Thank you to the millions who have responded with Brock Heward, Brock Osweiler. It was Brock Landers with Chess Rockwell. I want to say Brock Landers was Chess Rockwell. And that was his, or maybe. Wasn't it Dirk Diggler and Chess Rockwell? And then it became Brock Landers. And I'm not sure which Chess Rock. Anyway, great movie. You ever seen Boogie Nights? You're too young to go back and watch that.
Oh, I'll watch it tomorrow.
I mean, come on. It's great stuff. It's Burt Reynolds.
Oh, he's good.
It's the whole porn industry. It's based on John Holmes, you know, legendary actor back in his day. And his life goes sideways. And it's Mark Wahlberg who plays him. And Chess Rockwell is, what's that character actor's name? Irish guy. Riley. Riley's his last name. He was in Deadliest Catch and a bunch of stuff like that. He's a really good character actor. He was in that, I think he was in Step Brothers, too.
Okay.
You know the guy I'm talking about?
Yes, I know the face.
Well, you need to go back and watch that, man. That's like...
I am pretty pitiful with movies.
That's like a can't-miss movie, Boogie Nights. Very, very good. All right, well, let's do this right now. I'm honest about this now. All right, all this Jags talk, where they're at, what has to happen. You know, Jacksonville now ninth if the draft was this weekend. I hate to be the NFL draft guy, you know, this early. And obviously I want Jacksonville to win games. I think your mental health, I think your week-to-week process over the final seven games of the season, it's more important for you as a fan to win as many games as you can, okay? To get a feeling that we're closer. And this team is a lot closer than they were a year ago. I know they have the same amount of wins as they did during the 2021 season. You have the same amount this year with seven games to go. But this is not one of those years where, you know, kind of secret. I'm like, well, lose, improving your draft positioning. I think for the future of this football team, led by Trevor Lawrence, winning more games and losing draft space, if you will, is more important. Now, they're lumped in there with a lot of teams where they could really move up. I mean, right now they're ninth, but they're there with six other teams who were 3-7. For those of you who do not know, you know, Houston's 1-8-1, Carolina's 3-8, Chicago's 3-8. You look at the Raiders, the Broncos, the Rams, the Browns, and the Steelers. They're all 3-7, yet Jacksonville is behind them if you look at where they are based on strength of schedule. That's how the National Football League does it. That's going to change with 7 weeks to go. I mean, Jacksonville could end up with a top five pick. If Jackson was to go 2-5, they could end up with a top five pick, okay? But anyway, that's where I'm at with this football team. But as we are at the halfway point, so far this year, I think it's going to be a lot easier, and I hate it, but it's going to be a lot easier for you to come up with the most disappointing as opposed to the biggest surprise / positive player that you have seen on this football team. That's what I want from Jag fans as we begin our second hour. Who is the biggest surprise All right. Who is the one player that has surprised you, has been better than you expected him to be this year? And the flip side, who is the most disappointing? And I think we're going to get a variety of answers. For me right now, I would have to say Travis Etienne is without question the most surprising thing for me. Number two would probably be Tyson Campbell, although we saw it. We witnessed it. We saw the growth in the second half of the season. We saw him get better. Man, he is a Pro Bowl corner who probably won't get the respect because he's on a team that's won three games. But he has been sensational, okay? But those would be my two. Biggest disappointment, you know, most disappointing. There's really two guys that stick out for me, okay? Number one is Shaq Griffin. He doesn't have it anymore, and he's injured, okay? He's your highest paid player. And it's been awful since day one. I mean, this guy made more than $30 million and just did not play anywhere near the price tag. He'll be gone. He'll be a cap hit. They will cut him at the end of the year. Number two for me is Josh Allen. Okay? Nice player. Good guy. I mean, perfect in every sense of what you want as far as a representative of your organization. He is a fantastic human being. He's just not a great football player. You know, I tweeted it out last night as I was watching the game, and I saw the sack by Micah Parsons. He forced the fumble. Now it's like, I get it. I get when Jaguar fans are like, why isn't Josh Allen like this? Why isn't Trayvon Walker like this? And, you know, you see Aiden Hutchinson, who had yet another pick. He's had two picks now in the last couple of weeks. He had a fumble recovery. He had that huge play on goal line. We saw a week ago. He's making plays. And Jag fans, I get it. You're like, well, why doesn't Walker make plays like this? Why doesn't Josh Allen make plays like this? So I tweet out, you watch Micah Parsons make play like this, play after play, and I get why Jag fans are, why don't our first-round draft picks make plays? And obviously I was going to get a mixed result from the followers on Twitter, and I expect that. You know, one was, well, there was no one in the draft that was equal to Micah Parsons. And I'm like, well, hold on a minute. The guy went 12th. He didn't go one. He didn't go seven like Walker and Allen did. He went 12th. And so I'm not going to let it happen both ways. And you can bring up injury concerns with Micah Parsons. And you can bring up the fact that he missed the entire 2020 season at Penn State because of COVID. And say what you want about that, but there was a difference in opinion with the COVID talk. All right, remember we got into it here with J2 Fele. We got into it here with Walker Little and guys who, in you know, that whole Pac-12 was a total, you know, it was totally lost to begin with. It looked like we weren't even going to have a season then. Then all of a sudden they announced late that they were going to play an abbreviated year. That whole COVID mess kind of screwed up things a great deal. And, you know, the other side of it is why we're seeing all of these, you know, in 6-year players now in college football. All right, that's another thing I got lit up on. We're talking about Sam Hartman in Florida over the weekend. Some people there have issued me a drug test for coming out and saying that. Well, we'll see what happens. He's gone from Wake Forest. For Sam Hartman, I believe it's the NFL or it's the University of Florida, okay? We will see. But anyway, getting back to the comments there, I understand your passion. I understand your grief that you're like, why does Micah Parsons make plays like this? Why do the Boses make plays like this? What's going on with the top picks here in Allen and Walker? And I wish I had an answer for you. I don't have one at this particular point, but I think a lot of people will probably go in his direction. So light him up. Let's do that. And give me what you believe has been the biggest surprise so far on the Jaguars as far as the halfway point. Also, the most disappointing player that the Jaguars have had 10 games in with 7 remaining on the schedule. So we'll do that as we begin hour number 2. It's good to have you with us. Along with JJ, my name's Rick Ballew. Again, the best way to get on board is the text line. That is 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Jacksonville and Baltimore Sunday at 1. The Ravens are in first place in the AFC North. The turnover takeaway ratio, huge. Baltimore plus 9. That's saying something through 10 games. Jacksonville plus 1. Remember early on in the season, they had it at plus 7 and went a little bit sideways on them. Of course, did a great job with turnovers recently, but it wasn't enough to get the W. At Arrowhead, Jacksonville comes in. They average 21.6 a game. That's 19th in the NFL against a Baltimore defense that allows 19.9. That's 10th in the NFL. Baltimore's offense is 9th. They average 24.8 against the Jaguars defense that is 14th. They allow 20.5. The latest numbers, Baltimore early money. It opened at 3. It's up to 4. The total now at 44 against Sunday at 1. Should be really interesting. See what the Ravens. I mean, you know Jax is going to play with them. They play with everyone. This team does not get blown out. It's going to be an intriguing game coming up here Sunday at 1. It's one of those deals, again, where you look at the numbers and you're kind of like, really? I mean, after watching what Baltimore did yesterday, Carolina, you tell me they're still 9th in the NFL? 24.8 points a game. And again, I'm always going to go scoring offense, scoring defense. I've never been able to understand why so many members of the media, when they talk about team offense and team defense, that they actually use those statistics. Overall offense, team offense, is based on yardage. Why isn't it scoring? I think yardage is overrated. I think yardage can expand when you have a big lead and you're on your heels and you're playing prevent. I think the flip side of that, offensive numbers, and Jaguar fans, you've seen this, unfortunately, for the last decade, that doesn't matter who the quarterback is, you're going to see offensive passing numbers go up dramatically in the third and fourth quarter because the team is trailing. And they're one-dimensional. They're going to throw it. So you look at total offense and its yards, yet that is the measuring stick by so many in the NFL. I don't get it. And what's the most important thing to do in football? What's the most important thing to do?
Score.
Right. What's the most important thing to do in football on defense?
Stop them from scoring.
Exactly.
That's got to do with the red zone.
So why do we go – why is – offense measured on yards and defense measured on yards, not on the most important component, which is scoring.
You know, and you think too, like any really good defense, like I think of the Carolina defense when they went to the Super Bowl a couple of years back with Cam. Excuse me. If the defense gives you good field position, well, then from their metrics, the offense is going to be worse because you're going to have 30, 40-yard field goals.
You're right. I mean, hey, listen, I get it. You can cook the books any way you want and put some spin on it. But and I understand also this has been going on for decades, okay? But I've just you read articles, and they talk about total offense and total defense. I'm always like, why? Why are you wasting time with total? You know, create an argument for me. I'll listen. Create one for me and for the listeners that proves that you get more by your total offense and your total defense than your scoring offense and your scoring defense. Starting field position is a key component to that. I'll give it to you. How many people do you ever hear talk about the average field position to begin a drive? You're going to hear all the time about time of possession. You're going to hear all the time about third down conversion rate. You're going to hear, and heck, this city has been told time and again that Jacksonville is top three in the NFL on first and second down. Jacksonville has put together top five in the NFL when it comes to 60-yard drives or more. Very impressive. First downs, very impressive. Red zone scoring, okay, not as much. You're 19th in the NFL. You're just over 54%. It's better than a year ago, but it's still not where you want it, okay? I can't figure that out. Why yards and not points? Seriously, if you have a good answer for me on that or a good reason, I'd love to hear from you. 641-1010 text line brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. It's just, it's always been amazing to me. It really has. All right, getting a lot here. Positive, Zay Jones. He's been reliable and a surprising target for Trevor. He's not making a huge splash plays, but he is the one. Disappointment, Josh Allen. And then he puts in capital, sack the quarterback. It's from the 59-13. Well, Matt Jones, I don't know where that came from. 74-28, Blue. I don't want to get into that either. That's more Jags, but it's more draft. Biggest surprise is Travis Etienne. Okay, Mike Caldwell has done a remarkably terrible job as a defensive coordinator, especially because you have an offensive-minded coach and a very young defense without appropriate leadership. That is from the 0561. Well, and that's a major, major concern. And that is something now that completely has to be under the microscope over the final seven games. What's going on here? Okay, do you have the talent to run the defense that Mike Caldwell has been running? I thought against Kansas City, it was a pathetic look. Number one, Kansas City came in, one against the pass, okay, or the top-rated passing offense in the NFL. Kansas City has the top-ranked scoring offense in the NFL, and they were 23rd against the run. And they had just come off a game where their backs had 13 carries for 14 yards. And they absolutely gutted Jacksonville when it came to running the football. And Jacksonville looked out of position. Jacksonville looked like there was very poor communication. I mean, there were times where you were rushing three. Several times you were rushing three. And you know who the three were? Roy Robertson-Harris, Devon Hamilton, and big Foley Fadukasi. Those are your three, rushing the passer. I mean, you had Josh Allen dropping. You had Trayvon Walker dropping. There were 40 dropbacks that night for Patrick Mahomes. Josh Allen was only on the field for 25 of those 40 plays. And Josh Allen didn't rush the quarterback on all 25 of those plays. He was in coverage in some of those plays. So, you know, I understand the criticism of Allen. I also think now, as a first-time defensive coordinator, there needs to be some serious evaluation on Mike Caldwell. Is he running the right defensive scheme? I heard Pete Prisco on here last week. Prisco talking about moving Devin Lloyd to the line of scrimmage, adding weight to Trayvon Walker and getting him now to put his hand in the dirt. You know, that's what I wanted. I wanted Trayvon Walker to be a pass rush end, period. You know, my heart skipped a beat when I first saw him out there with Bill Shuey, the outside linebacker coach. I'm like, no, don't draft this guy one and ask him to do a ton of different things, including drop back and coverage. The Jaguars are terrible with their linebacker play when it comes to coverage. Who's their best coverage linebacker? Is it Chad Muma? I don't know. It's not a Lewicon. It's not Lloyd. I mean, I watched Quincy Williams play yesterday in that 3-3 game. Ended up being 10-3 to win. Quincy Williams is all over the place. And, you know, I know with Quincy, and I'm a huge fan, I hated that cut. And this isn't one of those obligatory, always a guy that they let go that's playing well. I was always a fan of Quincy Williams. I think the problem with Quincy Williams, he had a little bit of, he had a little bit of Andre Branch in him, a little bit of Devontae Fowler in him. He wasn't as obviously out of it or complete lack of communication or just flat out being stupid like Taven Bryan. I'm not saying that. Taven Bryan had no idea what was going on. Taven Bryan was completely clueless when he was on defense. But, there's been times where, you watched Dante Fowler, you're kind of like, what's going on there? And to me, Andre Branch was kind of the same way. That was it with Quincy Williams. Did he understand the scheme? Was he too much of a freelance guy? Was he into it mentally the way he should have been? Because when you look at him as far as his physical skills, man, he'll knock the snot out of you. All right? It's whether or not he's in the proper position. Well, he was yesterday. He had a really good game against the New England Patriots. So, linebacker play. That right now. Is this a better team with Mike Caldwell to run a true 4-3 defense? I, for one, would love it. There's nothing I'd enjoy more than to really see Allen on one side and Walker on another. And then rotate your big three men inside. Badukasi, Hamilton, Harris, okay? You got a little bit of Peters, perhaps, or maybe a little bit of Taste with Gotsis, although, he's more on the outside. And you can bring in Arden Key and bring in DeJuan Smoot in nickel coverage, pass situations. But when it's the run, those are your three big guys. And then bring in Chad Muma and put him at middle linebacker or put him on the weak side. Your strong side linebacker should be Devin Lloyd. And again, I think your middle linebacker should either be Muma. It might be too much for him as a rookie. The green dot is a Loacon. Maybe you keep him at middle. If not, the third guy goes to the weak side linebacker position. It just feels like that's a better defense to me. So, I hope that, Doug is forthcoming in his evaluation there. I do like that the offense has shown the ability to make changes throughout the season. The best example I can give you, go back to the game here against the Raiders. You're down 17-0. If that was earlier in the season, and the proof was there, even New York, a week prior, you look at New York, you look at Houston, you look at Philadelphia, they would have given up on the run, and they would have made Trevor Lawrence pass it on first, second, and third down. Would have been one of those games where you look at the box score, it was all said and done, and Trevor Lawrence would have thrown it 46 times, they would have run it 17 times. But no, to credit Doug Peterson and this offense, they stuck with their plan. They came back and they ran Travis Etienne, and they stayed with the offense that was a balanced attack. And it was a huge factor in the come-from-behind victory. What that said, and those two fourth downs. The first kick hit the upright. The second one, he makes it, 48 yards. You and I both know if that was earlier in the year, Doug Peterson's going to go for it on fourth down both times. But he learned. He made adjustments. He's understanding his team. It's time for the defense to make some of these adjustments. You're 3-7, okay? And I don't ever want to be the, the season's over. You got seven games. But I also believe it's time to figure out what you have, right? And with this defense, I mean, Shaq's gone in a year. Roy Robertson-Harris is gone in a year. I think Rayshon Jenkins is gone in a year. You invested three of your top four picks on defensive players. Are you getting everything you can right now out of Trayvon Walker, Devin Lloyd? Certainly you're not out of Chad Muma. You need to find out what these guys do. And there's a lot out there. There's a total difference in it. For everything I just said, others will say wrong. Josh Allen rushing the passer every down is not the best way to use him. He's good in coverage. He's good against the run. You look at Pro Football Focus, man, he's like top five against the run, Josh Allen. But no one looks at him that way. They want to see him be a Micah Parsons. They want to see him get to the quarterback. And it's not happening. He's got the pressures, but others will tell you that pressures are a very overrated statistic. It comes down to quarterback hits. It comes down to quarterback hurries. It comes down to sacks. And he's not getting them right now. All right, we got much more to do. More of your feedback. Again, 641-1010. Halfway through the season, a little bit more than halfway through the season now, with 10 games down and 7 remaining. Who is, in your opinion, the best surprise on this Jaguars football team this year and the biggest disappointment? Again, the best way to do that is on Twitter, Blue1010XL, or go to our text line. That is 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, no live shows this week. We'll be celebrating Thanksgiving on Thursday. We're off on Friday. So tonight for another 38 minutes, Hacker will join you at 8. Tomorrow night after Helmets and Heels. Wednesday night, 6 to 8. And then a couple of days off. Just got a text from Jessica Blaylock, who is settled in for Boston Bruins Tampa Bay Lightning hockey. Well, Tampa has scored 1-0 now. Nicholas Paul with the goal. The Bruins are ridiculous. They're 16-2. Tampa Bay 11-6-1. So I was checking the schedule because obviously Blaylock works with the Florida Panthers. They are off tonight. Very latest there. All right, give me, Dylan, give me positive, best player so far for the Jags, a positive. Also, unfortunately, the most disappointing player.
The positive, I'll go a little different. I'll say Devin Lloyd, even though he started really well, hasn't had as much success as he has the last couple of games. I mean, the dude really burst onto the scene first couple of games, and breaking news, I didn't really watch much Utah football, so I didn't really know what to expect from him.
Mm-hmm.
So he would be the biggest surprise. Biggest disappointment, I'll say, the defensive line as a front. I mean, getting to the pass rusher on the outside. Trayvon Walker and Josh Allen, I kind of expected them to have a little more success. Well, Josh Allen has 3.5 sacks. Walker has... How many sacks did he have? Like a sack and a half, 2 sacks, I think?
I think he's got 2.5.
2.5,
that's
right.
Walker. Yeah.
I kind of expected that to be a little bit more. I mean, the last game against the Chiefs, I kind of expected the Jags to get after Mahomes a little bit and, you know, not exactly get sacks, but, you know, get hurries, and there was none of that.
Yeah, okay. Good stuff there. And for what it's worth, you know, we talked about this right after the draft. If you were going to make him do multiple things, Jacksonville was going to draft Trayvon Walker, and it was going to be pretty close to impossible for him to live up to the number one draft selection if he wasn't a every down rush the passer. And, you know, we saw him drop back in coverage. We saw the phenomenal interception. Okay. I've watched this guy turn around and run down ball carriers 20 yards downfield. I think he's had a really good year, but he's going to be measured in sacks. And that's what's so disappointing about this. It's almost like it's a half-pregnant scenario, because for those who don't spend a lot of time really covering this football team, it's so easy to look at Trayvon Walker and look at sacks and say, he's not living up to the billing. Where, again, if they said, sic him, and that was your job, and he wasn't getting it done, then I think that type of criticism would be warranted. But you're asking him to do a lot of different things. Therefore, I don't believe his grade is what it could be, if that makes any sense. It's not going to matter to the national media. They're going to end up calling... You know, when they grade it, they'll come back, and I'd say he, you know, his top grade could be a C. depending on what happens over the last seven games, because he's just not going to get to the quarterback. And then you look at a guy like Aiden Hutchinson. What has he got, 5.5 sacks? He is going to, and obviously Hutchinson is being used in some different ways. I mean, the guy's got, now has two interceptions.
Got one yesterday.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, that is disappointing. But, you know, I think true fans here in Jacksonville will know the difference and do know the difference. 39-41 Blue, big fan of the Blue Crab Crab House. Do you have any reopen? Do you have a reopening status for us? Yes, I have been talking routinely with Tom over there. They said to me, hopefully around Thanksgiving. So I got to check back with them tomorrow or Wednesday. But yeah, I would think really, really soon. And I hope so. I've been known to spend my Christmas Eves there. I mean, really to the point where they have to ask me to leave. They're like, Baloo, you know, St. Nick is about ready to drop his sled right on our roof here at the Blue Crab Crab House. It's time for you to go home. And I think they said something like, you don't have to go home. You just can't stay here longer. Yeah. Right. Now, so I will have a report. For those of you who do not know, they had a kitchen fire. I'm guessing now, 4 or 5 months ago. I was actually out in Nashville on vacation when it happened. I know their advertising works because I heard from like 80. As soon as the first flame went on at the Blue Crab Crab House, I got like, no exaggeration, like 80 different people that I knew contacted me as if I was the owner of the Blue Crab Crab House. I'm not. I'm just a big fan of the restaurant, and I love the place. So hopefully they're back real soon.
That's good business.
It is good. It's good food. It is. You know, crabs, oysters on the half shell. Whatever it is that you do like, the good folks there at the Blue Crab Crab House. All right, let's continue on with this. 641-1010. I'm not going to do that. Getting a lot of stuff here that I'm really just taking me in some other directions. 9069 says, Blue, biggest surprise to me, Travis Etienne, between his injury and small stature. I think his production has been remarkable this season. He's shown something new in the league. The small stature is interesting. He's bigger than he looks. Okay, Miles Garrett is a monster. And I remember a couple of years ago, the preseason game, it must have been last year, it was Urban, because I was talking to Malik Jackson, who wasn't dressed on that night, and in the preseason, and Miles Garrett was right there with Malik. I guess I can say it now, right? All right, so anyway, I'm talking with Malik, and I used to do a show here with Malik Jackson. He's one of my favorite players who's come through here recently. When I was doing Midday Chalk and what have you, we did a year's worth of shows with Malik Jackson. And, you know, I saw him on the sideline. I was a sideline reporter last year. And I'm talking to Malik, and I'm like, man, none of you guys are dressing. And I'm looking at him, and he looks at me and goes, that's because we have a pro football coach. As he was mocking Urban Meyer, obviously, as being a college football coach. But you saw, I got to see Miles Garrett, and I was like, man, now that is a man. And I remember in the same situation, San Francisco, and it was Wes Welker working with Deebo Samuel. I always did that as a sideline reporter. I always watched the opponent work out pregame. You know, I just like to get an idea of what the other side looks like. And I'm watching Deebo Samuel, and I'm like, my God, look at that kid. Look at his lower body. Look at the tree trunks. Look how he's built. That is a monster. Okay, and I really didn't know it in him. I guess I didn't recognize that when, you know, I have seen him on television. It's the same way with Travis Etienne. Travis Etienne is a lot bigger than he looks on TV. I mean, he is a legitimate 215, 220-pound man, you know, on a 5'10 frame. And he's broken a lot of tackles this year.
It seemed like he was bigger in college.
I don't know about that. He looked bigger to you on TV in college
like,
than he does here?
Like a little bit. I mean, not like, you know, not a vast difference, but I felt like when he was in college, like it was like, whoa, that dude's pretty big. And then you see him in the NFL, and I mean, his obviously his size is the same, but
I guess what I'm trying to say is that if someone was to ask me, okay, you watched him play a ton of college football at Clemson, what type of back is Travis Etienne? To me, he was kind of like a CJ Spiller, kind of a guy that was twitchy, a guy that would make you miss. A guy that had phenomenal vision and wiggle. I never really considered Travis Etienne as being a guy who breaks a lot of tackles and has a lot of yards after contact. He's shown that this year. I didn't know he had that in him.
Yeah. When from the games that I remember him playing at Clemson, it felt like, at least when he ran the ball, not catching the ball at the backfield, that he would get the ball and he would go straight downhill. There wasn't a lot of east and west.
Yep.
And it's different here in Jacksonville.
That's from the 90-69. Biggest disappointment has been our defense. We looked dominant, almost elite in the first four games, but wound up pretty horrible. Yeah, it's, again, scoring defense. Last year you had, 26.9 a year ago. 26.9 points. You go back to the 2020 defense, I want to say it was 30.7. I mean, you allowed 30.7 a game in 2020. Last year, it was 26.9. This year, it's down to 20.5. That is a remarkable improvement. I'll never forget this conversation with the late John Clayton, who was so, so phenomenal. And it was one year on, it was either Radio Row or the Combine. I don't remember which one it was. But I had John sit down with me and, do an interview. Man, and this is, I want to say this was, it might have been either 2015 or 2016. It was one of those 2 years. Because John Clayton was, And I learned so much from that conversation because I bring numbers to this show quite a bit because key numbers mean so much. I made a huge deal earlier about scoring offense and scoring defense. A lot of that came based on this conversation that I had with John Clayton. So John Clayton says to me, all right, where is this football team? And last year you watched them improve by, I believe he said to me, almost 5 points in their scoring defense. Can they now improve by 4 points or 5 points with their scoring offense? And, I never really heard it discussed that way. Obviously, we hear about, you need to add a quarterback, you need to add an offensive lineman, you need a wide receiver. You always talk personnel, and you talk the draft and free agency and all that stuff, but you never talk about what it really comes down to. That's points. How many more a game are you getting? How many fewer a game are you allowing? And I always took that to heart as a great measuring stick as to really where this organization is. Okay, dismiss the 3-7 for just a second. Forget about the fact that this team's 3-7. Your offense went from 14.9, a franchise low, to 21.6. Okay, that's a touchdown a game improvement. That's 7 points. Your defense has gone from 26.9 to 20.5. Okay, that's nearly a touchdown on defense. Last year, you were exactly 12 points. And I bring up these numbers all the time because they are so important. In a league like this, where for the most part, teams are favored by a field goal, most games, you had 12-point difference per game between your scoring offense and your scoring defense. 12 points. And I remember sitting here talking with all the guests I have on, and think, how much can you improve this year offensively? Can you improve by a couple of points? Can you improve a little bit now defensively as far as allowing less? You've improved, okay? You were negative 12 per game a year ago. Right now, you're plus 1.1, okay? 21.6 scoring a game, 20.5 allowed a game. That's plus 1-1. That's a difference of 13.1 points per game from last year. Yet you have the same record. I mean, it's absolutely, totally mind-boggling. Again, just take that with you. You're 13.1 points better per game than you were a year ago. That is phenomenal as far as your recovery. And there's still a little bit of, you know, there's still some Swiss cheese out there. There are obvious holes that you're like, you got to improve there. You got to improve there. You got to improve. And that's obvious. But it's still encouraging if you look at it that way. And you know what? These aren't garbage points. That'd be another thing. You know, if you're getting blown out, it's 38-20 and you score a late touchdown to tack on these offensive points and it becomes... No, that's not the case. You know Jacksonville's been, what, had seven or eight now fourth quarter leads in 10 games? Hey, that's encouraging, at least in my opinion. All right, when we get back, we're going to take some final thoughts on this. Also want to bring up a little bit on college football. It's rivalry week in the sport that we all love, including Friday night, Florida State, Florida.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, the 0794 says, Ballew, given the Jags' ability to shut down the Ravens' run, do you believe Lamar Jackson can win primarily by throwing on us? You know, it's a throw only, I would say no. I think they do need some sort of a balanced attack, including him with his feet. You know, they shadowed earlier in the year, or I shouldn't say shallowed. They have taken on some quarterbacks who obviously can do that. Certainly Jalen Hurts is the one who comes to mind in front of everyone else. I like Jacksonville's chances if you make them one-dimensional. I mean, I really do. But the last time we talked about this was 2 weeks ago against Kansas City. Again, the Chiefs came in with a 23rd-ranked rush offense. And they had just come off a ball game where their backs ran it 14 times for 13 yards. And I'll have to look up the exact number, but they put on a decent one against Jacksonville. What was it, 140-some-odd yards? Let me find that for you right now. This was a week ago. Sunday, Kansas City ran it 27 times for 155 yards. Can't happen, okay? And it did, so... Yeah, some, you know, if you put it all on, well, it's going to be his ability to pass. Again, we did that 2 weeks ago with Patrick Mahomes, and we found out that they were able to run the football. All right, you know, let me get this out because it is rivalry week. You know, Thursday night we have the Egg Bowl, three NFL games on Thursday, plus the Egg Bowl. Mississippi favored by 2.5. They'll be taking on Mississippi State. My gosh, what happened to Mississippi? What a crazy weekend between that ball game and obviously Florida losing to Vanderbilt and Tennessee losing to South Carolina. Tennessee now losing Hendon Hooker as a Heisman Trophy voter. I had him under a, you know, tremendous amount of consideration early on. Obviously, the two losses now and the injury. He's gone. Florida State on Friday night. Noles favored by 9.5. Okay? Huge number. Dylan, you and I were just talking about it. I guess in some circles you could have bet on this before the season started, and it was Florida State -3. And I remember having conversations with a lot of people in this building like, how did they come up with that number?
Mm-hmm.
What did they know that we did not know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That number's now tripled. It's 9.5.
And deservedly so. I mean, Florida's defense, obviously, we know is not good, and they'll probably be without Ventrell Miller, their best player, for the first half with that targeting call. So It doesn't look good. And I mean, good grief, the last 4 weeks, Florida State's averaged, what, right around 40, 41 points a game?
They've been on fire, no question. They're playing their best football in a long, long time. What happened to North Carolina? They'll play Friday as well. They lose to Georgia Tech. I mean, I didn't get a chance to sit down with them this year, but Josh Downs was in, you know, the preseason meetings for the Atlantic Coast Conference kickoff back in late July, and he's supposed to be the best wide receiver in the Atlantic Coast Conference. I mean, he's got 77 receptions for 878 yards and 11 touchdowns, but he dropped, I mean, he dropped a game-changing football. I mean, he catches that ball, NC State goes down. Georgia Tech goes down, North Carolina wins, and all of a sudden you got no Devin Leary for North Carolina State against North Carolina and Drake May coming up on Friday. I know I'm playing golf on Friday, I think around 11 o'clock, so I'll be able to watch this game. I'll be coming off the golf course. I don't know what it does for you. It does a little bit for me. You know, I just have trouble getting geeked up about games in the ACC that don't involve Florida State or Miami or Clemson. Sorry for being truthful. Georgia Tech, Saturday at noon. The Dogs are favored by 36 points. Michigan and Ohio State, number two, number three, Saturday afternoon in the Horseshoe. Is Ohio State really 7.5 points better than Michigan? Wow. Why is that just screaming at me right now? And it's saying, play Big Blue. Play Michigan. Getting 7.5 points in this rivalry game. I tell you what all of a sudden becomes really, really interesting is after what South Carolina did to Tennessee, and is bad. I mean, they couldn't even come up with 200 yards worth of offense against Florida. And you see what they did? They hung up, you know, they hung 63 on Tennessee. Are you kidding me? South Carolina, 31 of 38. Spencer Rattler, the best player on the planet. 438 yards and 6 touchdowns? And then they ran it for 153 yards? You trying to tell me you put up more than 600 yards and 63 points on Tennessee? Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So, you know, Clemson's just kind of cruised their way through another 10-win season. That's 12 straight now for Dabo Sweeney. Clemson favored in this game, as you would expect. They're a 14.5-point favorite. They won 40 in a row at home. Who did Clemson have? Was it Louisville? Again, who do they have on? Oh, they had Miami, for crying out loud. That's right. Yep, they just crushed Miami. Miami didn't even have 100 yards worth of offense. Total destruction. So you have that game coming up on Saturday. Some other key rivalries, Auburn, Alabama. This is in Tuscaloosa. Bama favored by 21 and a hook. Don't bat your eyes towards Oregon State. I stayed up late and watched Oregon, Utah. By the way, those are the two best games, I thought. That USC-UCLA game was the best game of the weekend.
And hey, how good is Caleb Williams?
Oh, man, throwing against his body some of the precision or the accuracy. I will say this. I respect the gig. I am not supposed to openly talk, which is crazy to me, because you would think they'd want to promote it more, but they don't want me openly talking about who I'm going to vote for the Heisman Trophy. That's been a longstanding rule, and I respect them. But after what Caleb Williams did Saturday night at the Rose Bowl, if they can knock off Notre Dame, and what a game that's going to be in the L.A. Coliseum. I mean, all of a sudden, Notre Dame's playing outstanding football. I still can't believe they lost to Stanford. You know, they had a huge blowout. What was it, BC? I mean, they crushed them 44-0.
Lost to Boston College.
What? Yeah.
Notre Dame lost to Marshall, too.
Yeah, I know they – yeah. Kalen Lamborn, the former Noel, ran for like 175 yards against them. If Caleb Williams, after what he did Saturday night, he knocks off Notre Dame, and then they win a Pac-12 championship game where he puts up spectacular numbers, it's going to be – he's certainly on the short list No doubt about that. So that's another great game coming up on Saturday night. That'll be at 7:30. LSU, Texas A&M. I want to keep an eye on that. I want to watch Jimbo lose. I want to see Texas A&M go to 4-8. You know, it's going to be LSU, Georgia, right? Because LSU, even if they were to lose, they still have the head-to-head victory over Alabama. Central Florida, South Florida. All of a sudden, Tennessee, Vanderbilt. Hooker's out. Tennessee licking wounds. Vandy's won two in a row in the SEC. Tennessee favored by 14. And then the late-night Apple Cup. Pac-12 after dark. Wazoo playing host to UW. Phenomenal week. Rivalry week. Much more on that tomorrow as well as Wednesday. Folks, I don't check the text line now if the show is over. You want to get a hold of me, please do so. Blue1010XL on Twitter. Thank you to Dylan Denmark. Packers up right now. My name is Rick Ballew. We'll talk tomorrow.